Right, we'll get started. So make sure the microphones on top table. Can anybody hear the back of the room? Just protect the read up more. Any apologies? Okay, just before moving on the agenda, I'd like to welcome Mary Newcastle. They're going to make a video for the back of the room. I hope you can enjoy it. Page 1, page 2, page 3, and page 4. Any issues on that horizon? Ben?
Sure, good times in Uganda. European study of culture. It's not just a beautiful machine there because it's going to be in Europe.
Sure, and the council has announced the matter of support to the Boston Council there for the council, and since then, members who were aware that the European vehicle has been withdrawn, so we received a letter from that Boston there to say that we're full weapon on hopefully the final resolution.
Okay, I thought it doesn't mean anything about him.
I had asked last time, I just want to show this to the IGG. During the last month of the year, we were talking about certain events. On one issue, I had asked the IGG to stick to all the groups that currently run the tourism there. That's what we're doing. But should that appear in the IGG?
Sure, it's my understanding about that. We're actually training them at the event at the event meeting.
37 mountains of age, meaning last month, and last month, and
well, I'm assuming that would be a couple of years, but I'm going to come on accuracy, so I can go back and check just for the mountains.
Any other issues from reaction team? Have you not? Hold on a second. Item 4 is a presentation on people speaking on the post in early morning, then I'll hand over to Owen in a small moment.
Thanks very much, Chair. Can you hear me? Is the back okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen that feeling when I was speaking over the heads of the councillors here to maybe the future councillors at the back of the room. Anyway, what was asked to look at today was what makes economic success look like when you're in Bourne in 10 years' time in terms of where growth would likely to come from, what that might mean for in terms of employment in the labour market in 2026. And I suppose what challenges it may pose for the council as well, in terms of kind of infrastructure, housing, those sorts of things. That, if, in a sense, what success might look like, and what that might mean for you as a council. Where the growth might be likely to come from is based, I suppose, on two things. One would be the current performance, internationally and locally. And then secondly, we've done a bit of work in the Economic Policy Centre in terms of modelling out what an upper scenario for growth would look like in terms of employment and labour market change and what that might mean and what that might look like for Newry, Mourne and Down. And in a sense, if you're looking at a best case scenario, it would be for for Northern Ireland to look more like the average in the UK around employment rate. At the moment, we beat the employment rate across Northern Ireland of about 63-64%. UK as a whole is sitting at about 70%. So you'd be talking about a sizable upshift in terms of numbers of people in work. And I suppose that's what the best case scenario might look like. I'm just going to bear with me here. So basically that's what I'm going to talk through is the current performance locally. The current performance locally, what the best case scenario might be, and then finally what success might look like for four sectors. What you might be looking at the moment in terms of if we're saying that economic growth might come, where it might come from. At the moment, we're sort of looking internationally at a very much a sort of a weak recovery. You can kind of see the darkest line on that chart, and there is the current recovery. And it's probably the weakest recovery from recession. You can kind of see that the lines along the bottom there in the best part of sort of 60 or 70 years. So it's been a fragile enough recovery, particularly in Europe and the UK. As well, but also in North America too. So that's in a sense you're looking at in some ways a job build, job rich recovery, but not an awful lot of economic growth in firms. So what is that for Uri Morning Down? What Uri Morning Down looks like in 2016-2017 is, as it's been for a long time, very strong in terms of strong in terms of kind of business side of things and entrepreneurship, and much weaker on the labour market side. So if you look at Uri Morning at the moment, what you're looking at is a much higher share than the Northern average in terms of numbers of firms, GVA that it produces here locally, and the gross value added, the number of overseas visitors would be higher than the kind of population should be for the council area, and its exports and things like that. So firms are here, firms are doing well, but in a sense that hasn't impacted as much as it might do in terms of the labour market. One interesting thing I suppose as well is that in terms of inclusion, you're in more, was pretty well in terms of a lot of metrics around social inclusion and well-being, but if you look at the kind of wages and the house prices, wages are behind the Northern Ireland average, whereas house prices are above the average there. So there's a little bit of a conundrum there in terms of for young people in particular in terms of affordability of housing. So the council does well in some metrics, not so well in others. If you look at the types of businesses that are here, and this is where employment tends to be, good specialisation in the council in terms of food, the food industry and manufacturing, tourism and retail. So they would be more concentrated here in Uri Morning Down than the Northern Ireland average. Less so in services or in the public sector. So they tend to be less than the average in terms of those employed in the public sector jobs or in business professional services than you might have elsewhere in Northern Ireland. So in a sense, the council could be a lot of good firms there in traditional sectors, less so in some of the modern sectors. But on the other hand, that actually allows a good low base from which to build on, and that's where the other scenario might come in for the council area. So in terms of the outlook, if you look at a best case scenario, the best case scenario is in a green line there. And if you think about it really, if you look at the kind of trend line before 2016, what you're really looking at is the kind of sharp upswing in terms of recovery carrying on for the next 10 years. You're probably looking at 9% growth in employment, and around nearly 6,000 jobs being added on in that period, and employment rate going up significantly, heading towards sort of 68-69% of people in the area actually being employed. And as I say, that's a kind of good share, the 5,800 or 6,000 jobs, a good share of the 80,000 generally that'll be there in Northern Ireland as a whole. The other scenarios, even on baseline, there's a good addition of jobs, but less strong than it could have been. And you can kind of see But we've been forecasting that the first couple of years going into Brexit with then uncertainty, you may actually be losing a couple of years of growth there in 2018, 2019, and then picking up again in the 2020s. In the worst case scenario with a bad Brexit, there's actually a loss of jobs. I did think 10 years time, we would still not be back to where we were in 2016. So that's a kind of indicator of a bad or a hard Brexit or a disorderly Brexit, take it as you will, plus some problems for investment and consumer confidence. So those are the three scenarios. The one I want to talk a wee bit about is the upper scenario, because in a sense that's where success might come from for the council area, or for this council area. What might look like in terms of employment based sector, when you think about these things, it's about how firms are, these are all firms, if you like, creating jobs in these sectors. And in, it might be hard enough to read that. On the left hand side, it's actual numbers, on the right hand side, it's percentage growth. Good, strong numbers in some of the traditional sectors there, construction, manufacturing, Admon continuing to recover. Also, healthcare, Admon more. But the big one there is more than 1,000 new jobs being added in professional services. And you can kind of see what that would mean in professional services rising by around about 30%, whereas ICT, to say that from a low base, albeit, will be adding on about 50% numbers there. So big growth in some of the emerging sectors, but as I say, from a quite a low base. And think again, I suppose, as to what this really looks like. This looks like jobs for residents, jobs for some of the young people at the back of the room in this area, as well as, bear in mind as well, there's 80,000 new jobs added on across Northern Ireland. About 20% of our people every day head out of this council area to go and work elsewhere. So there'll be jobs added on elsewhere for people to commute to, as well as jobs in this area. You know, the other 80% tend to work in this council area. So that's the kind of thing. And so I suppose when you're taking that from that, what you're really looking at is good growth in some of the traditional sectors that are already here, and tourism, I mentioned in that as well, tourism, good big numbers there, growing by around about 750 new employees in tourism in that. Not as much a percentage growth, because there's plenty of people employed already in tourism in the council area. But emerging new sectors there, ICT, knowledge services, and particularly professional technical services. In terms of what might drive or what kind of challenges it presents, when you look at the kind of best case scenario really for somewhere like Newry and Mourne, what you're looking for is three things, I suppose, to drive growth. One would be investment, either, as I say there, in terms of the community plan being acted out in full. Other areas where investment that might come in is the city deal that's talked about for the Belfast City region as a whole, what the council area might get. From that, and I suppose also investment that might come from businesses, either new businesses or existing ones, dependent on reduction in the rate of corporation tax to the same rate as there in the south. So I suppose that those three things would drive investment. The point I would make there for yourselves is that it's not just a case of relying on FDI coming in. There are good enterprise spaces springing up here in Newry for existing firms to actually expand into the other spaces. And it's maybe a case to, if we're looking at kind of professional and technical services, about thinking about the types of enterprise spaces that we're creating in the council area, to whether it's the old bricks and mortar or sort of industrial estate, or new types of office space and hotel space and things like that. So think a little bit about those, if you look at ICT firms coming in, and what types of space and enterprise space do they need. So think about that, about investment. The corporation tax issue I've mentioned, our agreement on that's going to be critical for both investment coming in and investment by local firms too. Moving on then to entrepreneurship. This is an area that I mentioned earlier, Newry and Mourne and Derry does actually do very well in. We're good here in terms of our entrepreneurial activity. We're good in terms of our startups. The Business Start program is very successful in this council area. It's one of the most successful here, and then also would be the two leaders across the north. More than 400 startups in the period 2015-2017, which has created over 450 jobs. But the challenge that we're always there that it poses is creating scale. Most startups might start up and add on another person, but it's getting them to the more than 5, more than 10 employees, and if that's really where the benefits come in, as I said, that goes back in part to that investment. It also goes to the third thing I mentioned there, and I know the council has been very supportive of some of the activities around innovation in terms of what SRC and others are doing in that space, what investment in arms have to offer in terms of innovation vouchers or Intertrade Ireland, and those are the things that I think that will really drive growth and create growth. We all look at the kind of startup figures of new firms, and it's good to champion that, but as I said, some of those startups do add more than 10, 20 people in them, and it's actually only really through export and innovation that will happen. The fourth point that I took out there just for yourself, if you look at the top 100 businesses here, and I took those, take that basically as the client companies of Invest Northern Ireland, there would be 110 client companies in this council area. When you take the top 100 there, they're accounting for about 3/4 of all exports out of this district, and around about 80% of external sales, a lot of increased sales to GB. But they're only accounting for 10% of the direct employment. And it's an interesting one that a lot of firms who are kind of staying locally, doing their business locally, maybe selling a bit across border, are the ones who are accounting for most of the employment. And I suppose the point I'd make on that is that whilst growth might come from your top 100, top 200 firms, not to lose sight in terms of kind of policies and rating policies and so on, of the businesses, the 90% of the businesses who are actually employing 90% of people in the council area. Innovation and what that might mean, it's something there. There's challenges and risks to the jobs in terms of automation and smart manufacturing, but there's also going to be other issues around there about innovating to meet some of the societal challenges, particularly aging and some of the issues around there. And I think it's no coincidence that when you look at the best case scenario or the upper scenario, and healthcare employment is going to be one of the big growth areas. I think a big area around that is around kind of making sure people are well paid and properly paid in that sector, and that the sector is sustainable. The risks then, I kind of hoped I'd get away without having to mention Brexit in this presentation. You never seem to manage to do that, but I'll move on around that. That's one area, I suppose, the uncertainty around Brexit when you think of the best case scenario. But there's a couple of other ones, I think, that are there for council and for council when they're talking to some of the agencies and government departments. One is a key area here of the retention of staff. When we think about growth, when you think about growth in this council area, around about 1 in 5 employees who are employed in firms here come in, migrate in from other parts, either of Northern Ireland or from across the border. And I think keeping that flow of inward migration into the council area would be critical. Even if we were, let's say you were to add on 5,800 jobs and hope to fill all those 5 people here, you'd be talking about wiping out unemployment and eating well into labour inactivity in this area if you were to do that. And I don't think anybody in the room expects, in a sense, that there's going to be all the people with all the skills. Some of the people with some of the skills will come out of those schools of people, but maybe not all of the people with all those skills. So in terms of kind of keeping migration going, I think within into the council it's going to be key, as well in terms of retaining staff and keeping skills there. And the final point I'd make there is about finance and investment. One of the other areas, I suppose, that people can maybe think that is resolved is around the whole area that there's finance available for businesses. To speak to businesses again in the last 12 months, it's becoming an issue once more in terms of business now in the recovery and looking to add on investment. And it's one of the areas where that there is uncertainty. And I think keeping that to the forefront of your minds when you're maybe talking to lenders, business lenders, be it banks or others, is probably going to be important there. Growth won't come unless there's investment money available to your friends. So that's basically all I'd have to say really on all of that.
Before we open the floor for questions, can I just add that the presentation is sent to all members of the room? Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Could you just qualify something there where your top 100 business just seem to have 10% of direct employment? What exactly does that mean in employment terms for Because of this. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I think if you take the top 110, let's say that 110 firms, and I'm assuming that those in a sense, Invest NI would be working with probably those firms who are exporting most and are most productive in the area. That tends to be their remit, Councillor. So they would employ around about 6,500 people between those 110 firms, and the employment numbers for kind of residents. Sorry, for workplace employment in the council area is about 66,000 as total. So you're kind of looking at, that's why I would say that it's about 10% of the direct employment.
And you mentioned the new startups. I mean, local entrepreneurship is key to any economy, and the more new startups you get, the benefit for all concerned. Polar investment, as they said, and as their little project says in polar investment, this is where people like me have been hopping on by the SMA.
Talk about wage levels, and I know you mentioned the care workers, and I think there's a report out today actually on that, on the per level of pay. I think one issue that I see is that there are jobs only, but pretty poorly paid, and there's a few like this, but stagnation that I can see is certainly in the last 10 years, the wage levels have sort of stagnated, where you know, gently inflation and costs have gone up, and it's probably likely that. Continue that. So I don't know how many, if there's any, in terms of the report or the research, where you see wage levels going, but certainly at the moment I think that's why we're seeing the levels of immigration going on. Because yes, people can get a job, but they don't want to get paid for it. They're having to go to Canada or wherever. And even at the moment, I'm still here, we're used to here, you know, maybe 10, 13 years ago, the days are in local trade now, we're in Dublin again. On the early shift away out of the power favors to drop the market back to the same time to 6:00 PM, 7:00 PM. They're getting very well there for it, but it's a young man's game, and it's not, you know, tends not to be sustainable for people in the long term. Thank you.
Yeah, so it is a good point. I mean, what I've kind of looked at over the last year is that I went back and sort of looked at where wages would have been, say, 10, 15 years ago, and we're actually the real wage, if you want to call it that, which would be, you know, wages when you add in inflation or when you kind of factor in inflation, are actually behind. I don't mean just in this council area, right across Northern Ireland, they're behind where they were 10 or 15 years ago. And that is, there's that issue, and I think one of the other issues that we're starting to see and need to kind of keep a watch out on is what they call a precarious employment, where almost like people, the sort of Uber type employment or zero contract hours, those types of employment contracts. So I think these are issues for us. I'm kind of heartened by the idea, in some senses, that at least government departments have taken notice of this, and they're sort of looking at, it's not just about jobs, but kind of what a good jobs index might look like for the north as a whole, but for council areas like this. Interestingly enough, in the west, if you can go from the Stearns west, the wages, the issues there around sort of wages not keeping track of inflation or not keeping the track of the standard of living is actually much worse than it is today to the east. And I suspect that is something to do with the fact of retaining people in the kind of the Southern Corridor. I don't think it could be any more than that, and it's about retention of staff. So in a way, if you're employing somewhere in this area, you might actually have much more of a struggle to retain staff when they can head to Dundalk or further south and pick up employment there with better wages. But the point you made is a good one. I mean, it's that commuting gain is certainly for a certain period or a certain time in your life. It's not, as you say, a young man's or a young woman's game, as opposed to later on kind of childcare and family issues coming along. So.
Thanks, Derek. I think what you're saying there, Derek, is your man.
Thank you, Paul, and all your friends in the studio.
again, and just I suppose the whole thing, I suppose, is about looking into the future for us as a council. And I suppose I'm asking, I suppose, for if you pointed out certainly the challenges that lie ahead and some of the weak points, but I'd like to know really what have you seen, you know, in your expertise, councils have done to make the changes, you know, for example, all councils anywhere need actually intervening in a manner that's just, and we obviously need to be slightly ahead of somebody else. But if you look there at the wages, you know, you're talking there about automation in manufacturing and smart manufacturing, you know, is the way forward seems to be. You know, there's a fact that a small amount of that area that sees some launch recently. But, you know, what can we do? You know, what can we lead on? Any other question I have for you?
I think that it's, I suppose in the first thing I'd say is that getting an exact comparator to maybe the council area here is difficult, but you know, leaving it to one side, what I have seen, there's probably two ways of looking at this. I'll give you a couple of comparisons. One with an urban based or a largely urban based council, and that would be in Galway City Council, and what they have done. In the fence, it's a risky strategy, but they tend to put their eggs in one particular sectoral basket in their own sort of the life, not life sciences, but medical devices and software in around that whole space. And they kind of push the education providers in that council area, particularly the university, but also GMIT, the Institute of Technology, there to be kind of delivering out graduates that firms might want. They'd look to bring back people who've been working in the States and elsewhere and in on sort of kind of good incentivized schemes. It is also maybe enterprise based in the city itself. So that's one example. If you look at another example, kind of further down that coast, further down the west coast, into County Kerry, they've gone a different route because, in a sense, possibly a little bit more like this council area. They have a couple of urban centres in it, not huge by any manner of means, and then also a lot of rural space. And what they have done is actually concentrate on the kind of rural economy there and rural enterprise and supports for that. So in a way, they've gone the other route to sort of say, well, how can we get rural enterprise and rural development and tourism enterprises across the council area to move from, as I understand, one or two employees up to the 5, 6, 10 employees, and have introduced a couple of schemes using things like Leader and so on to actually promote through tourism and other kind of tourism activity in and around that. They've probably put their eggs in that particular basket. So there's different ways of doing that. I think what we see is common to both those is a concentration not just on the startup, but how to bring the startup through to something that's maybe a bigger scale. So one of the points I'd make is that for if you were to kind of canvas young people at the back of the room, would they prefer to work in a firm that employed 50 people or a firm that employed 3 people? Most, at least starting out, might want to work in a firm that employed a few more people in terms of kind of having a social life in around it and so on. So I think that's an important factor here when we're trying to retain young people in the area of businesses of scale and are maybe the key to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Michael.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Owen. As you said, it's quite informative. My query was really around something that Charlie touched on there, the top 100 businesses with Invest NI, and would that include the likes of Norbook or Zen Electric or Sika? So they are in that. I'm between all of those top 100 big companies across this district, only employ 10% of it.
Based on their, I mean, I suppose if you take something like some of those would have, say, like Glen, would have, you know, Glen Electric would have employees up in Portadown or wherever, but based on this in this area, in these workplaces. Yeah.
And you touched on corporation tax, so that actually discussing it. How do you feel if it was lowered to such a degree, would it have a massive boost? Or would it be a fair idea given what it's going to cost us and black hat or whatever? Is that your opinion with it?
My opinion's moved on that, I have to say, over time. Initially when it especially when it came out, when the proposal started to come out, I would have been of the view, if you took a lot of council areas outside of Belfast in particular, I thought if it wasn't going to attract in foreign direct investment, it wouldn't be up and off a huge amount of value through council areas outside of Belfast. That would be my initial view on it. And I also kind of felt, in a sense, I wondered whether a lot of firms were already probably getting enough, probably good enough currency advice to be able to reduce their real tax rates to around about 10% or 12% in any case. But I think when you look, I kind of went and had a look at it again, and when you look elsewhere, what it tends to do, at least over time, and we're talking over a period of time here, I suppose that's why I was trying to look at a 10-year window, is that what you tend to see is that cash that's put into sort of almost cash reserve starts to be freed up for investment in firms by people who are, you know, have to pay corporation tax because they're paying that little bit. Well, that's a fair bit less on it, so it tends to free up capital in that way. So the point I was making there is that in a way, it's a little bit like companies who get to the VAT threshold and then don't earn more because they're maybe going over the 80,000 and having to pay VAT and do all the problems with that, in a sense. And that tends to dampen down a lot of kind of activity in firms. I think with corporation tax, there is probably an argument for saying that it actually doesn't, it takes away one of the discouragements, if you like, of actually growing your business that bit more. I think in the North in general, and this council area would be no different than most, there are a lot of good businesses, a lot of good business people out there who hit a certain stage and then don't go further. Reductions in corporation tax, some of the issues around that, I think, as well, could be looked at. There might actually encourage people to sort of take that next step on the edge of export and developing a new product or service or whatever it might be.
Thanks, Brian. Brian.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is more of an observation. I would love to find out where we as a council are engaged in what's right of the relationship on our president. But you also mentioned the tourism industry, the hospitality industry. And my fear is reasonable. The young people out in fact who are from a lot of the gaps in the industry with part-time jobs. Mm. And I think to allow them to achieve more and to drive families up, we were promoting some kind of NDQ type courses. So if they're taking a part-time job on a restaurant or a bar, they are taking some of this. And then that will lead that there is some jobs at home to, because when these young people get an education, they're really, you know, just to move away from here to find work. And that is a lot of commute.
Yeah, sure. Just a couple of my observations. Number one, our area is pretty much largely rural, which is probably a disadvantage to us. I know we have an area in that which is serving as far as fancy, and just, we have all sorts of problems there with the infrastructure for broadband. I know it's rolling out, so it is, but it still is a problem. The skills base. Quite honestly, that is a problem for the skills. I at the moment think they're not targeting the right discipline or the types of skills that they're producing. A lot of the businesses are small businesses. I know everybody sort of picked up on this 10% there. You know, the small business actually carry a lot of the communities, but at the same time, they're only servicing the bigger, how would I put it, the big businesses that are. So, what I'm saying to you is this. The role of the council in all this should it be just a support facilitator to the businesses to move things forward?
I think that, you know, given kind of the powers that the local government have, I think that's often been the role of local councils, and I think that should continue to be the idea of facilitator. Some people often describe it as a way of not getting in the way of business, being able to do business, and that's probably a good way of putting it. I would go a little bit beyond that in terms of possibly going back to the point that Councillor Casey made at the start, you know, it's kind of holding some of the agencies' feet to the fire a little bit in terms of maybe supporting companies beyond the top 110 or whatever it might be in the council area. There's a little bit of that too. There's also in and around facility up in Business Bay, ensuring maybe infrastructure is kept well up the agenda, not just say some of the camping pieces of infrastructure, but some of the smaller ones,
like broadband roads,
those sorts of things. Your point is very well made. If you look back at one of the figures I had there, that there were 11% of the firms, 11 in terms of numbers of firms here, this council area would take up 11% of Northern Ireland's total. It takes up 8% of Northern Ireland's total employment. So you can see the difference between the two there, that there's a gap between actual firms and employment in the thing, which is down to do is due primarily to the size, the average size of firms in this council area. And probably, again, you will find that in a lot of rural areas.
Thanks,
Chair.
Thanks,
Chair. Well,
thanks very much for your presentation. In regards to the professional services group, I agree with your comments in regards to the old industrial parks aren't fit for purpose for their types of businesses. And I think we do, actually, the only local area where professional services businesses couldn't find locations that suited their needs. And what I mean by that is a bespoke type of development for professional services in a business park environment, which pleases me on the eyes, but was also getting out all the services. Then you talk about good broadband, you know, connectivity. But also being able to be in a town without choosing, and then sort of linking other aspects of lifestyle, good golf courses, that type of stuff, good restaurants. We do business with clients, that's the type of environment they want to see. So we have an opportunity to a new development plan, maybe looking at professional services option moving forward. Just maybe your views in regards to that, and this is the new proposal for the new civic center in Europe. I think that's a good opportunity for professional services, you know, to be the civic center as a stimulus for that type of activity. Just your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd agree entirely with that. I think the Civic Centre does pose an opportunity certainly for that type of development. I think, mainly, it's also there in the Civic Centre in Downpatrick too. I think everyone who takes a run into that can see how you might do that. And also, I think a little bit about the industrial parks that are there and the space that's there in those. If you look not that far away, if you look down, say, Cinnabar in Dundalk, you know, there are professional services firms operating in what would be traditionally a sort of an IDA industrial park, by which we would, you know, mean they'd have to do a discipline sort of water and kind of a few roads in and out. But there's a lot of kind of professional services firms have been able to go in to those, the likes of PayPal and so on in Dundalk. So your traditional industrial park setting can be transformed in that way. And if you look at some of those industrial parks, let's say Finnabar is a good example, but there are others further down in Drogheda and so on. They're unlike, in a sense, unlike what we would have thought of as industrial business centres in the past. And I think that's something to think a little bit about. It doesn't have to be throwing up huge buildings, but it can be sort of smaller spaces within, or shared spaces there too. Interestingly enough, somebody would say that the best cup of coffee you get in Dundalk is actually out in Finnabar Industrial Estate, which is probably an interesting thing. Some of the other businesses, pop-up businesses, that get us a chance to kind of start up there too.
Yeah, thanks.
Great.
More questions? Well, thanks very much for your presentation. And again, we get presentations and not all members. Yeah, if you want to thanks. In fact, Green Guardian and Sanford last in jail, and that's
so I'm just going to confirm this thing.
This is to confirm in your appointment 1718 additional in your appointment from the NIES for Stranger Law and the Field Partnership term, and also it's confirming the appointment for the two ARMB, both the Rendezvous and Stranger Law for the 1718 financial year term. So we'll have that. The strategy has been developed and is currently recommended, that was mentioned, to the department for approval, and we also have received from the department an offer to the council for the administration and running costs of the program term.
Okay, so I can end up accept that all of the subject. It is on the posted and not inside by Brian Quinn. Any questions?
Sir, just going up there, the plan to be quite honestly is one of the more and more beneficial bodies to the fashion community outside town. I think that one would agree with him up there. Between creating new jobs, attracting young people into the industry, supporting diversification in the commercial factories, as well as the capitalizing of all the environmental assets of the factories, all that is in the report. Quite honestly, it's very, very true. I thoroughly support the program and hope it creates more jobs and everything else. So thank you very much.
We've got a proposal to second that. So moving on to item number 7. Thank you, Mr. Patrick. Jonathan.
Chairman, this is a project that we have been working on for some time. The council has set a budget. We're waiting a letter of offer from the department term in terms of anticipating that. We have had redundant to say this, the design work and the planning term. We have had some additional items to cover, and we're seeking approval to put a 6,000 pound additional cost to complete that term. And then a number of issues raised through the planning process around finished design and integrating with the heritage landscape term. So that is to try to get that project over the line.
So, we're approving for the expenditure of 6,000, so it's ready when DSA release funds. Any questions for Paul and Tyler?
We will, sir.
Paul Stratton, second. Are we happy to move on? Okay.
Chairman, following on some degree from the presentation, sir, we have been working as part of the MOU with Louth, in terms of the enterprise organisation in Louth, our own enterprise agencies here, and there's been some discussions of weighing that out to include more in the legal chairman. And the proposal is to develop an innovative salary programme, chairman. We have referred obviously in our background to this where industry is currently on a co-innovative programme, and following discussions with industry that has been identified where there would be additional support for companies who don't make it onto that programme but are equally have the potential to be innovative term and be brought forward with some sort of innovative action plan. What we've worked up is a proposal that would involve certainly all the details there, would involve the three areas working together to support 80 businesses from a pilot programme. The cost to this council term is £25,000 for the pilot, and then review for additional years potentially see how you can have both important. So the recommendation is to consider the £25,000 term. That would be built in as part of the economic development for this year, not next year.
Thanks, sir.
Yes, sure. I mean, it is appropriate that we have the one doing the presentation just before this. This is exactly the type of thing we want to lead on in our area here. Reading through that there, when you talk about the 80 firms, 20 of them are from Uri, so we're going to get a first slide of the cake in there between Loud, Uri, Monaghan, and me. I think this sort of thing is certainly is absolutely absolutely needed to bring on exactly what we're talking about. But I do know of cases where the mentoring program, for example, the firms, very, very small units, were given the professional expertise and the knowledge, the background knowledge, to be able to actually bring those on in the path to farming it out. And I know certainly of cases where those that were involved with it found it extremely, extremely helpful and certainly had put their businesses to a whole new, onto a whole new plane. So, I mean, this here is absolutely welcome, and it's great that the MOU is working in this sort of way, in a very positive way, on a cross border and regional basis. So, I fully support and propose it.
Thanks for voting that. Second.
Particularly around Brexit, it's important, you know, that management have that support mechanism in case this whole business can expand anymore.
I was just a comment. Something not about a child and the unique is not a
problem. An issue is moved around the world, really is a pilot program this year to see how it goes. So that's something that we look at moving forward. If we allow it, there's a lot of these programs that we've built, and it's hard to work off, you know, what is a reasonable and a reasonable target. That's what we're putting the resources that's available in terms of the personnel and people to bring in what we think we can achieve based on the other programs that are run in this state. But it's something that we will certainly do and look at maybe improving on the information on it. If we have what's very well. So.
Thank you.
Okay, so we can pull it from that and that's second to one. So, what do we have to move on?
Yeah. Item 9 is an audit of vacant properties. I'm aware Councillor Shavin has asked this to be added to the agenda, but I will take in Josh. But I will take in after the comments from people sitting on the main motion. So, all of the vacant properties. So,
Chairman, this is something that has been discussed previously by the committee. There also have been discussion on where we are engaging with the two local enterprises to support the host in general, wider economic development in Hilly. Chairman, what we're bringing those two items together here is one is where we try to mechanism what we can do that through a service level agreement with the enterprise agency and having reviews in terms of the requirement we're having. And all of the vacant properties, Chairman, we believe that this is something that could be delivered under that service standard between the two organizations. Chairman, what would really be piloted again in your area and probably where there's an SME and maybe look at rolling that out in future in other areas, Chairman. So the recommendation is to improve the service standard and the mechanism to be using this to deliver the case to vacant properties.
Thanks, Alan. Any committee members wish to make comments?
Please. And just to be clear on it, sir, the template plan that we use for the experience?
It's really to look at the level of direction then, you know, so within the two urban centres, then trying to identify those with ownership, what are the patterns to them being used, what is the intent of them being used in the future, and then sort of develop some sort of strategies of how we can bring some of these buildings into more productive use if they are available. We are aware that there are a number of issues that are either in the way that they're at, not just, there are other things. So I suppose it's looking at what are the strategies that we can apply or work with, probably in how to get even more productive use. So the range is just really an odd encounter, trying to identify what the issues are that maybe are in bad state of repair and it's going to cost too much, that's a different issue. But are there other things as well that we can maybe, work with businesses to get them to use, both from producing and from the landlord?
Chair, I'm optimist. Just to say the types of initiatives that's going to be undertaken with a big scope within this proposal. I find a lot of people have businesses and small businesses but are working from home and they haven't taken that next step to get on the high street. Is there an opportunity, like on the streets for a period of time? I'm a business got up and running, 3 to 6 months,
which had that, you know, this was got better in, is the first, is the first point. And just in regards to the types of businesses, again, we could look at, and I suppose looking at niche type businesses and put them in one location, if there is dereliction for whatever reason, there could be a series of reasons. There could be a niche business that could complement each other in that location. Is there scope to do that? I know there's a small amount of money there, but just an idea to the concept.
It is a tendency to say that explore what the issues are, what are some of the problems with the issue of home. We don't really identify outcome in terms of race. So I think that's always quite difficult. We probably would be taking another analysis. There's no plan here to pay for race or anything like that. We should look at exploring what the issues are and what's potential. Are there issues in there that we can use to address directly to the local authority or kind of maybe the departments that we can deal with that? Or are they greater than those schools? We're trying to bring it all together and that we want sort of facts and satisfaction figures. But yeah, the whole idea is I think that would be one of the areas certainly looking at maybe where certain property generals set for certain types of businesses or the groups of businesses or some other use. But it's really about the land campus. The issue more to get a hand on it is kind of the problem and then how you can move it forward and how you can move it forward. So yeah, there's been an opportunity to see that and that sort of idea. But no one needs support at this point. At this point, you know, like any sort of incentive at this point, that's something that would be able to categorize so we can get a state what the issues are heading for.
Yes, so, thanks, Jared. I can't be an accident initiative, but I spoke with some difficulty too, because I do remember a gap site in Chinalty that took me 8 or 9 years to decide who the owner was. But in a situation like that, what power do we have that the owner doesn't want? Do you know what's happening? What are our powers to actually force something to happen? Because there's nothing as bad as building sitting in some sort of direction where there is a potential for some sort of business on. What
power
do we have to make them do something?
Sure, I'm sure we can't force anyone to do. The issue is more trying to maybe work with them and see whether they release property or be prepared to if the business is coming forward, that they would maybe want to engage in the shorter term. I know that there has been a few pet decisions around pilot and put some businesses in on a short term basis, just feel you know, like all of a sudden pop up. Format where businesses go in, and sometimes that can be an incentive to demonstrate that to a landlord or a property owner that there is a use here for this business. You could get so, correct business if you can get them into some sort of leadership company, and they have market them in some way. So, we don't have a probably can't make a landowner bring business into use, but I suppose it's trying to start engaging with them in some shape or form and on that end of businesses as well. So, maybe businesses are looking.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I suppose Charlie was in there but very quickly about the legislative powers that we may have. We had a situation where one for almost 12 years, the local hotel and the council was very involved, and they were on this far to talk to the woman and bring it all back into life. Without success. I think it really goes there in question what's the point of going out and getting this big list of things if we can't do anything about it really at the end of the day. And I know that many in the new department have tried very hard to reference to the Oracle Hotel. There's even a whole community outcry about it. So why are you going to get a list of 20, 30, 150, whatever these properties out there if you can't do it all and spend $10,000 for it?
If you bring some of them back into use, I suppose that's up to many of you. Don't start somewhere. We have been identified as a challenge in a lot of our current centers with direction. And you know, we can't force a property owner to let a building that's on top of them, but if we try to engage, if we get some buildings into the back of the region, that would be a start. But I mean, suppose if we don't start somewhere, we're not, we are getting challenged all the time with the length and the number of the time chatter time. People will pop back and say, well, we've done it such a time, but they don't have a proper direction. So, you know, where to start? But this is an attempt to try to start and do something about an issue that, yeah, it's going to be difficult as to what the end product is, but if we don't start somewhere, how do we deal with the challenges from the problems with the direction and the time chatter?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you for partly answering my question, and Michael put ahead as well. But when we're doing that research, if there are businesses that are looking past it, that we don't restrict ourselves to the community all the time, that we consider the rest of it, since you have the number of vacant premises set on all of those new houses that are just crying out for people to occupy them.
I'm just wondering, it's more or less a balance, I think, are the bigger properties over the whole area, or is there a certain area more attractive for me?
It's an issue across not just this district, but other districts as well, but so it's really where you start here. You try to map this across the whole of the district, and then you don't have any sort of solution in some way of trying to tell it to find a way out of it. But you do run the risk of spreading because there's no other resources to work with, doesn't it? And it does cover, you know, a number of areas, but suppose it's if we can get a pilot going and find some sort of solution to really some sort of quick win to make those things spread out and not come out. But again, if it comes up, you know, as part of this, or stopping a bit to locate in another area, we really not to say, well, we're not asking them to show those folks in these two areas, and that would always be part of our very support business in the business town. And we would say, that's our first back to the area. Second?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that certainly this is a great idea again. You know, and then you know, for bringing this forward, because it is reflective of what communities are saying out there. And that's, you know, town centres, the two side and town centres are of course deservedly suffering quite much the same type of problem through the vacant properties. But if the people out there don't see the council trying to do something about the lead on it, and if we have the wherewithal to do so, then you know, then we're neglecting really what's fairness it is. I mean, some of these problems are they're blight on our streetscapes and landscapes. And we can find the owners to a more fruitful future for their buildings and maybe adopt a philanthropic outlook in terms of for the vacancy and so on. And maybe they will get a bit encouraged. We could bring in partners here at council level that they might not even know about, you know. And some of these, you know, I know certainly some of the older properties in the area, they're relying on families that may have left the area and they're just getting, you know, they're sitting there and nobody really bothers them. So I think it's extremely important that this is brought forward. Again, we can then build this into our local development plan that we're currently starting up and working on as well, and I can see that information being very valuable into the local development plan for the cities and towns of the area as well. So certainly welcome.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for your patience, Gareth.
And thank you, sir, for allowing me in, given that I'm not a committee member. Really, the reason why that's to be put on the agenda is that St. Patrick's has became a sort of common area for local businesses, and businesses that are going to be new to this town want to move in and be part of our district. And the main trouble that they have is not understanding what properties are actually vacant, what size of properties are actually available, and also sort of one thing that I'd add into this is there's a lot of vacant land, you know, that has been set aside for development. You know, in St. Patrick alone there's 19 hectares that was set aside under an InvestMI report, and that 19 hectares is left over from 23 hectares, so 4 hectares has only been developed. Really, sir, those counters will know that the brands of Marks and Spencer's, Home Bargain, even Nest and Burton have ventured in to see what is available in their fabric. And one struggle is that they're all within 10,000 square feet, and sometimes upwards of that. And it's actually helping the support them understand what is available. You know, they have agents that are going around trying to see land that is there, is the business going to do, and there is local businesses in Down Public that actually want to expand. Seymour Dugan's recently closed theirs, but actually they're moving in with the local business and are actually having furniture within that existing business, and the space is limited, so they are looking for a bigger site. So really, sure, this is more about understanding what we can offer, you know, and I am focused on Down Public, and I do appreciate other centres will look at their own areas, but this is saying that Down Public is open for business. Down Public is willing to help facilitate the understanding of what we currently have, what we can offer, and what the potential is out there. One thing, it's up to the committee, is that we do include vacant land in the reports, because, you know, that's as important as what is existing as a unit at the moment. It's understanding vacant land. Because one of these big brands may want to come in and build a whole unit themselves. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gareth. Suppose we need a proposal, and but even that amendment comes from the committee, everyone talks about some of the vacant properties. So if anybody from the committee wants to add on, also they can add an amendment to it. Seconded from Gavin Watson. Can I get a proposal then for the Flynn? And back up to the table. Thanks, Franklin. Okay, moving on to item 10. Our last harbour development, they're done.
Chairman, as the committee be well aware that the council has been working into Cade and that a new harbour development plan for Cade that will future-proof the harbour and the whole fish processing industry then into Cade. But part of the work that has been done in our house was identified at a high level opportunities for the other fishing port within the district community on the last term. I suppose this is coming forward as a mechanism where we believe we need to now get a piece of work done to look at what does that actually mean for our class harbors. All that I've been saying that we've got, and then we need to start doing a bit more work with the local development group there, Chairman. And in order to start that process, Chairman, we'd be recommending council set aside some money in the budget moving forward to work along with potentially the best NIA, hopefully, and the relevant departments, Chairman, to see can we develop some sort of a plan that will help the issues and the opportunities moving forward for our grass should the new harbour development proceed into the journal. Both have the opportunity to obviously to secure the future of the fishing industry in this area, but I think some of the opportunities there are to need to come for them, and this is how the chairman suggests that's done in partnership with the local harbour group, harbour development group in Hardglass and the private sector term. Thanks, Dylan. Flynn?
Chair, just on this, first of all, I would like to commend the people of Hardglass to get themselves funded to see it, so they're certainly moving forward with us. You do need to look at this and you do it to see what's coming forward. And I welcome the proposal, so just looking at Chair, £25,000 from ourselves, and similar £55,000 then from Seaflag, and then 10% from the local director, and that's what's hopefully going to turn up. So, but I have no problem with it whatsoever, so just reading all this. This is very, very dependent on what happens in Kilkeel's area, because if Kilkeel doesn't get the new harbour or in the foreseeable future anyway, we don't know what's down the road. But on that, the two ports and port of Dunkey there are very dependent on each other. The boats do be in and out, the flashy boats be in and out of gas there. And we do need to put this all together. And I think Dermot would agree on pretty much everything I'm saying. So I'm happy enough to propose this to him. I want to make a lot of development of treasuries and on the current down coast and it's pretty much central there. So I'm happy to propose so far and all the mail will get the sense of place there and a few others will go to the other one as well.
Thanks,
Willie.
Thanks, Chair. I second the motion. I think it's important that our glass should not be left behind. I think it's important that the Wagner team has a mass plan in place for moving forward. I think it's important that our glass is the same opportunity. And I too would like to congratulate the group for coming together and coming up with proposals and what they want to see. Some of the proposals we're looking at is have the harbour deepened again to allow greater access for bigger boats. There's issues around Curran and Mackerel, and they have to go to Belfast land. You know, so there's issues with processing. And there's also then the other issues of ancillary type business, it's still marine engineering, marine electrician, painting, and that brings on they need a drag up, you know, for painting and for working at vessels. So there's a number of issues, but hopefully then this piece of work will identify the opportunities that I see there in regards to have an office space, training space, community space, opportunities for further types of retail to do with seafood. And so happy to thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Chair. Quite nice to support the proposal.
Brian, can you switch on the microphone for go forward with this?
I support this proposal as Chair. I would be very much in favour of looking after the EGR, but maybe developing a plan for all four ports, including Newcastle and Annalea, so that we're setting out a long term thing. Because in Moorhead, we're in a unique position that we do have a fishing industry at all levels, both with the larger boats and with the small family boats who fish crab and lobster. And I think that we have to be catering for them all in some kind of a plan. And I know there's quite a few in our grass who fish crab and lobster because of the unique coastline that they have down there. And I think we should be supporting all of them.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Brian. We have a proposal in the area of the
Sorry, Michael. Yeah, Chair. My support. I would like to see a small change to the description of it. In that, when I first read this, I have to say, Doug, we're spending $100,000 for a business case, which sounds quite alarming. But our investigation is without marine surveys, underwater surveys, or whatever, have to be carried out. I would just elaborate a little bit on the title if that can be taken aboard. Secondly, Chair, just and here quite a lot of discussion about fishing villages and fishing harbours and so on. But I did find out that Warren Point over the past number of years has catered for the mussel and farming industry for a long, long time. And in past times, we've fallen between cracks with regards to funding. And I'm just wondering, are there any opportunities there for Warren Point? Sometime in the future, we'll come back and let me know about that. Okay, thanks, Chair.
Michael, just to, for clarity, you haven't proposed any amendment to this paper, it's just the title you're asking.
It's just a word, I realise that it's not structured just for a business case, and it's included some of the surveys, some of the work that needs to be taken in.
As I say, we've got a proposal on second. So moving on to items. Access audit strength of that material and
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the issues, Chairman, that Heather isn't part of the whole development of the Council of Tourism strategy and end up looking forward to the development of the geopark concept. That has been the issue around access to Stranford Lock, which I'm working with our partners in Hearts North Down, this proposal to carry out an audit of the access to Stranford Lock. So I'm recommending that this carried out to identify where access currently exists, where it may be impeded currently, and also
work for the enhanced and improved. Chairman Poole's recommendation is that we carry this work in partnership with Origin Work down to the cost of $25,000 next term.
I propose to go with that recommendation.
Sorry, I
think it's very important, you know, in regards to water sports, that we have to, we do have access to the waterways. It's a sensitive area, so it has to be, you know, carried out directly. In regards to, you know, the kayak trail, I spoke to people at the Skippy Festival, and it was it. What their number one issue was getting access, you know, to the water, you know, having a pontoon to get out onto the water. There's restrictions there in the ADA, so hopefully, you know, this will be a way forward for everybody. We don't like to have the best waterways that we can't get access to, you know, so happy to support it.
Moving on to item 12, international relations, sorry.
Sure, this is coming out of the International Relations Forum meeting, and it relates to both some of our contacts, and I'm not going to put it in detail, but it's reference to the recent visit to Europe. There has also been an invitation for returning visits for some small types of investors to an exchange in February, and we're recommending that that is supported. We've had a request from a Russian student for a placement for the period of April. Well, as soon as possible, but the committee has suggested the International Relations Forum group has suggested that it will be the period of April 2018 to March 2019. And then members will have seen the recent news regarding the Chinese delegation that was in Belfast. There has been an approach from the Chinese generation to look at the development of a friendship agreement, and we're recommending that to include further consideration of that development of a friendship agreement.
That's right, Gareth.
Yeah, I just want to put some things there, Chair, on the Chinese angle. But it's plain to see, Chair, the progress is going to sort of on the tail-off strategy in terms of the student coming over. I was a person who was over the students more and done exceptionally well out of their time here getting the first student from a member and just working in hospital now and it's doing exceptionally well as my year and the following year. So it's good to see that and that someone else has an opportunity that I'm happy to propose.
Thank you. Anybody else on the second one?
The other thing is, do you see the training program with our areas? Are we looking at that now to allow them to help and support? Because I've been approached by a few of them, especially Mama Hinch and Ben Hattie ones. Are we looking to support those as well?
Yeah, sure. If you just
pass
an application, are you
going to
connect international relations forum with them?
In years going forward, we have a budget for the schools to make it a Brian, do you want to talk a little
Sure, we are seeing work with other schools, and as we agree with the next international relations working group, that we would actually invite a number of the principals and the SORC principals in relation to developing international relations as well. So we'd be inviting them to the next international relations working group.
I would suggest that maybe the group has developed something around the Suez Canal. Of the government over there. Seeing as how the gentleman who designed the Suez Canal was from Kilkenny, and last year was a significant anniversary for the Suez Canal, it's something that we may have also had some link with the Suez Canal. So, you know, it's a big thing for our area, or potentially for the city, but it's also what the Suez Canal is a modern thing does, and offers young people that opportunity to look at merchant navy and design and these different things to create their careers. But these have those already existing obvious links.
Thanks, Ryan.
Sure, but again, I'd like to ask the International Relations Working Group then at the next meeting and kind of bring that out of
The club's background to some of the other relationships that are developing as well. Sioux Falls, which is actually very big in terms of emphasis on business and trade. Business and trade, and then further considerations that you want to talk about. I think that certainly needs to encourage, and I would be glad to get a regular report on the proposed and your report on the development of Appen.
Sure, I can report back to the committee every time we have Sure, and that's one that we discussed at the International Relations Group, and part of that development is going to be around the relationship with Rockwell Collins and Cahill, and however Rockwell Collins is doing further development, so we agreed that we will hold it on this and see if there is something that we can do moving forward, but that our emphasis at the minute will be on the care of the Chinese and the southern things.
Are you only promoting Irish culture, or are you getting about 23% of the council area that isn't of an Irish culture, in the sense that I wouldn't cast myself from an Irish culture?
Sure, I don't think there's any
difference. Yeah, I didn't read it down at all.
But I think that certainly wasn't the intention. It's literally the culture of the area, and it's imperative.
Yeah.
The point I'm going to make is this Chinese connection. I mean, the potential of our home kind of Bible, I have to say. The shame on these, I think they're sending a team out to China sometime in the new year. Now, for a small little bit of financial assistance from us, they can already carry out literature from this council and, you know, pass the message. It's not the goodwill that, you know, we're open for business.
That's correct, Chinese is, and I think that would be a fantastic opportunity, certainly for the participants, and that's been done on the invitation of the Chinese region themselves. We have met, as presented in the paper, myself and Liam, and indeed Rosh Minister Clinton, with representatives from that region, and there's a process you go through in the development of a friendship agreement. So it takes a bit of time, and all of the principles will build and be developed and delivered, and within time we will report back through the committee. I would be hoping to bring an update in January regarding
Thanks very much, Robert. In the old area, we didn't have micro studies, but we had the twin ones with the different local areas. But the very chance of maybe setting up a meeting with the chairs of those twin groups that was in the down area. Because it's all around the Murray and this part of the world. So there's another part to the Murray one down there.
Sure, if you want to provide me with a detail of that, it's probably arranged for them to come through the International Relations Working Group.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Robert. We've got a vote from Gary. Second.
That's right.
Okay, item 13 is the Chosen Culture Events, and the event is one being called for the 18th and 19th.
Yes, sir, this paper sent out the detail of the tourism events funding call in terms of the criteria and what's for the call. The paper was written to present the workshop to members on Thursday, the 30th of November, and since then some dates were needed to reflect feedback among the members at that workshop, but the whole details set out in the paper. Thanks, Andy. Before I go to the floor, I just want to make a few comments on this paper. I submitted from the workshop. I was out of the council right here at the second workshop, and I was at the first workshop. And I suppose from the first workshop, what was presented was in the 1.2 million tourism budget, 92% of the budget would be in council operated tourism events, and 8% of the budget would be in community led tourism events. And it's not that I felt strongly, you know, that needed corrected. I think there was an imbalance between the two. I think that if we are trying to become the premier tourist destination in the islands, it's going to take council and community groups working hand in hand together. Proposals from myself on the floor of that tourism awareness meeting was an 85%, 15% split, which I fully understand was nearly doubling the budget, with a £90,000 extra spend on the community budget, which was going from 105 to, I think, 192, if I remember correctly. Now, on the paper that was presented at the next meeting, there are three scenarios that are outlined. And just to give a bit of a comment on the three scenarios. Scenario one, to remove 8% budget from all the events within the main tourism events program. The scenario that's outlined there states that this will mean that smaller events become unfeasible. Now, when you're looking at, you know, events becoming unfeasible, if you're taking 8% out of the budget, and surely it goes across the whole budget of 1.2 million, or 1.1 million of the council-run events, I wouldn't expect that circa 8% would come out of all the events. If you're looking at smaller events, you only get 5,000 to 6,000, surely it has to be echoed right across it. So the fact that it says that, you know, what it means that some events become unfeasible, I think that is too strong of a description. If it does become unfeasible, how? Why? You know, we need to have hard facts in there to say why would an event not go ahead with the 8% cut in budget? Or some smaller events, 4% cut in budget, why would this event not be able to go ahead? We could be talking about 500,000 or 600,000 from smaller events, and 8, 9, 10% from the bigger events. So I think, you know, in scenario one presenting to try and meet 85% 15 cut amounts to an opinion. All it is an opinion that it won't be it'll become unfeasible. And I don't want to disrespect, you know, the councillors' hard work in coming up with these scenarios, but I would like to see a little bit of detail around some of the scenarios so we can sit in front of us and say, right, that's the best option going forward. Otherwise, it's not more than just an opinion. We're simply saying we can't have these events if we make those certain 8% cut. So, you know, the problem with scenario one for me is clear from that. Scenario two, if we're looking at a 12% cut from the giant adventures, I want to just make a brief comment on scenario two and scenario three. We're looking at scenario three, where I know was the favourite scenario from people that were contacting me. And we're looking at a 30,000 in addition to the community led tourism event budget, which I take from 105 to 135. At 35, sorry.
That's not
enough to try. Yeah, no, the comments sort of it goes across both of them. Yeah. Making a 30,000 pound adjustment to the giant advantage would have a minimal impact. Yet making a 90,000 pound adjustment right across the giant advantage would mean that we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and look at the whole programme again. Now, there has to be a red line somewhere. You know, 30,000 make a minimum impact at all of what we were at in the 85-15 split. And that's okay, but £90,000 in a 1.2 million budget is going to be completely detrimental to the giant adventure. And what we're trying to build is a tourism product here, we're going to have to buy the drawing board and look, can we deliver this? I don't think it's as drastic as that. I think it's an over-calculation. I think if we're looking at some of the budgets there, we're looking at the festival of like 140k proposed, and on paper it looks like it's a cut of 18,000. Truth be told, the festival of Light is proposed to move from 1 day to 2 days. So if we look at the budget last year to this year, it doesn't match an 18,000 pound cut. So we have to, you know, look at if we're going to deliver what I said at the start, tourism and permanent tourism destination in Ireland, we must work hand in hand. And if we are building and growing council-led events, and I'm not speaking out of it against council-led events, but I did a number of them last year, I think, fantastic. But I am not possible with growing council events
at the cost of community-led staff votes. And I think if we look at any on the council meeting on Monday, we'd ask for the figures, we can operate them on each of the staff votes. I know we've seen, everybody in this committee has seen a video of how successful all the festivals were last year. And it has to be reiterated that community-led festivals and council festivals were all amalgamated in that. And if we're looking at the economic impact of the festivals that were run last year, the economic impact is as much with community-led festivals as with council. So don't anybody be confused and say, you know, the council are delivering this. And if we ask for, you know, a cut on or to try and cut back on some of the funding for the council and tourism events this year, that we're going to stop to go to these festivals. We need to ensure, in the first tracking that was given to us in the first meeting, you know, we talked about the 105,000, but of modifying the community-led festivals over 3 years and measured the level of growth. How can these festivals grow if we are stagnating the growth with funds of 5,000 and not capital of 10,000 pounds? And then, you know, 105,000, 10 festivals, 8% of the cost. How can them festivals grow? You know, if we look at some of the community groups, and I've been very vocal in this community, or in this committee, sorry, about the Pride Festival. 3 years ago, through this committee, the Pride Festival was 12,000 pounds in funding. Last year, the Pride Festival was 5,000 pounds in funding. That is over 3 years, a fantastic festival that I would not like to see cut, getting a real-time cut, 58% reduction in the funding from that festival, and they are scraping the barrel. There are a lot of community groups run festivals on a shoestring, and the return for them are enormous. And if we look at the figures that we were given as a breakdown of all the festivals, we take Wake the Giant, for example. And I do want to say, you know, in statistical analysis, I've done a number of statistical analysis in the past, the background is in maths, and I understand how hard it is to try and put figures together when you've got a small survey. And some of the surveys there in Wake the Giant, 125 people out of 9,000. Again, we've got, I think it's in some of that, below 10,000, 100 people were surveyed. That is 1%. In some cases, some of the figures that we're looking at for the economic return or the estimated spend is at 0.8% of the figures that went to that festival. So it's not terribly accurate. But if we do take it, it's going to show a trend right across all the festivals. So if we take the Wake the Giant Festival, we have, I think it was £100,000 spent last year, an estimated spend or return of £307,000 in that festival. The summer festival that gets 10 grand in funding and had a return of 671,000. 200% increase in that. Yeah, well, constantly, you know, in this thing, we're looking at development and growing the giant adventures at an enormous speed compared to the community events. And I feel that we're going to slowly choke out these community led tourism events and say, I think the dangerous line is, I will finish this. Option three, and I think I'm making a joke about community events. Option three, I don't think voluntary contribution should be in that. I think that's very tracking. We know we're talking about a tourism budget here of 1.2 million. There is a budget for voluntary contributions of 78,000. And to put that together in option three with an increase of 100 to 135, and you can see there a nice round figure of, or a nice rosy figure of 213,000, you know, that sort of satisfies the committee that we asked for 192. That voluntary contribution is totally separate. It shouldn't be in that option. We're looking at, we know community groups can go and get money from voluntary contributions, but we're looking at a tourism budget, how we split up a tourism budget to deliver tourism events across the festival, across the district. Figures that were given us show that a lot of community-led events are highly successful for a return. This council should be working in tandem with them, and I know that we do work in tandem with communities for leading events, but we should be looking at a more equitable split. I don't think 85-15 was unfair to ask. You still have the potential here on a tourism event with a £1 million budget, which is an enormous budget, but we still need to be back in the communities that are running 15, 20 years extremely successful events. So I'll open up to the floor for comments about the options. William.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with all of your comments in regards to some of the most successful festivals, the Losing of the Day, the Soma Festival. I've seen the figures, the valuation figures there as well. It's remarkable that they return for a small amount of money from the council, what they are actually bringing in. So I argued at the same workshop, the first workshop, that we needed to
to the additional money in that part also. To allow the investments to grow or have an opportunity to grow. And I think I also to raise it to 15,000 for our four main festivals, Donkey Head festivals. And I think we've got that in scenario three. And moving forward to 30,000 increase, which I think it gives us a bit more flexibility in regards to supporting them festivals. But then the organizers, that's a wee value what you're doing. The council, and I'm even meeting the groups as well. I'm sure it's passed on to the regulars, and we appreciate all the work they do on a voluntary basis. And I suppose that's the difference, is on a voluntary basis when the council have to run our festivals. We make them a free event. So there's no income coming in regards to that. You also then, you know, you have to pay yourself, you have to bring in all the services that have to go with the festival. They are very extremely costly. You know, you have to bring in your security, you have to bring in your ambulance cover, you have to bring in all sorts of insurance and buyers and all the stages and stuff, and everything has to be top notch with the council in regards to any festival they run. And some people have said in the past that we're overkill, we're going to commitment, our festivals in regards to the type of support staff that we've placed. But I think it's exactly what you said. You know, it only takes one thing to go wrong in regards to that festival. So it's important that we have all that support staff in place in case unfortunately something did happen. I hope that will never happen to that festival. But that's some of the costs that are in that. You know, a lot of the costs that are in that type of situation. So I think it has to be recognised, you know, the upfront costs as well. I think an important aspect of the document is in regards to the manager and looking at corporate sponsorship and for opportunities for corporate sponsorship for the community sector as well. And indeed ourselves, you know, if we can get any corporate funding, that's something we need to investigate also to lessen the burden on the repair. But I think it goes without saying, you have the doctors and figures. I think they're by 45%. I think it's massively important that we continue the investment in all our festivals, but we also need to support the community-led festivals also. I suppose right going overboard, I think it's important we increase the number of visitors coming to the area from outside the island of Ireland. It's important to get southern visitors if we're looking at Camlach. Camlach Lake and you look at the footsteps in the forest, a big increase in visitors from the south side is 50% in footsteps in the forest. So obviously we need to grow that market right across. I just think we need to bring the visitors up to the south, but we need to bring them from across the water and from Europe and elsewhere as well. So I think marketing and our advertising of our events, I think is critical. Getting that message. One example is we look at the jam, we're increasing that to, you know, say, 7-4 new jams. So we need to, you know, after missing legends, we need to create that opportunity for people to know the events they exist, you know, and something worthwhile for them to come with us. And I think that's what that expenditure is about. But I think the best solution was scenario three, and I agree with you, Chair, in regards to we needed to put more money in. And 30,000, like some people would say, that's not a lot of money. I think each of them, the festival, had not 5,000 pounds. I think they can do a lot with that 5,000 pounds. And we can review this, you know, moving forward next year, see how it's working. We continually need to evaluate how we do our festivals, if there's savings to be made. And I'm sure Maria is the director is looking at that. You know, continually looking to make savings where they can be made at a safe way of making savings. So I propose that we accept scenario three and move forward.
Thanks, Mike. Michael.
Yeah, Chair. And I do listen to, and I know yourself, and what you two are both very passionate about the whole subject. We had a workshop, first of all, where the proposal was made, the 85-15% split, and then we're called back to the second workshop to see how that would be implemented. And at the second workshop, it was sort of indicated, there weren't indicators, it was quite clear that this figure was plucked from the sky, that there was no, nothing behind it. But I can see where the 85-15 kept on, and I listen to yourself, I listen to the impact even that a number of community festivals have had on the district. We get more for our buck by supporting a local community festival than we do in some of the bigger ones that we run ourselves. I think the implication that the cost cut is not right. I think that a lot of you have a similar amount of thought. There was a feeling at the last meeting that we should go with option two, but I still remain unconvinced. I have to say, I think that there's a lot of groups out there. In fact, that we're increasing the path to that right, we're increasing the possibilities for more festivals out there that could apply and do much better with a little bit of financial assistance. And I think it's time that we propose option two.
Yeah. Our council before we forward the proposal,
I'm 30 years old. I want new festivals in there, so I'm really known that I do want that in there, and I want the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I want to ask is, how many festivals have actually approached you or indicated to you where you that may be available to this? Because I know of at least one survey that really emphasizes that and one that's possibly a little bit more money. But I'm talking about the whole council area. And all the new events, whenever they go to this, what they want to make considerable mattering so they will to get their ducks in line for them, for one to put them that way. They have no financial impacts, they have nothing to support them that way. They're coming from a difficult place to start with. I don't want this to end up with the same old festival. They're good festivals, and I can make an economic impact, and I have no problem with any of them to have. But I want to see new ones support serving. I do want to see new ones given an opportunity to come in there to the and develop themselves with a little bit of support from the council.
Chair, I would say we've talked to the main, all of the main organisations that we supported in this financial year and in previous years. In terms of new festivals and events coming on, I suppose it's a product life cycle, which is a business life cycle, all of these things, and if new promoters or new events are going on, there's the route of voluntary contribution, there is a funding mechanism there for smaller scale festivals to come along.
So you haven't actually helped out anyone at all. So you've just actually just put it down that you went out and helped the ones that are already there. That's what I'm saying, because you haven't.
That would be a point, I suppose, if open call is to open up and advertise in the paper and for you, if anyone has new ideas for tours and events, that they could come along and apply this and talk to us about.
Well, I would like to think that it's not going to be accessible to show the new ones brought on board, so I really do like to find that. So, because I know it's. We don't try to help them, they're never successful. I know some of them are there at the moment. One in particular, the 755 in this council, so they're giving us something like £50,000 in the debt.
That's how much you've got, isn't it?
Yeah, 755 what they've got in this council.
I'm sure groups like that would be eligible to apply under the open call then. So,
yeah.
And we've committed to working with each of the groups that apply to the open call.
Yeah, but that's the type of group. Submitted your criteria here.
some of the bills I know will be difficult to fulfill because they haven't got the support, so they haven't, of the council, with all these financial impacts and all that there, so they can't produce bad news, bad nights, they can't produce all that information. So to get them some financial assistance, we're going to have to be creative in the way we support them.
Then just to be clear that you're proposing your second, you're having issues with criteria, you're seconding that criteria.
I understand that, but I'm just to answer the question, he's only at this moment spoken to those who are on pretty much the main list, it's a new one by my understanding service, more so. I have no problem with the supporting all them, but they're all done good.
I think that's the issue. If the open call goes out and this is a tourism budget that we're talking about, an event budget for tourism, we can't money the water by talking about voluntary contributions. And that's why, I criticize
that.
Even the 750,000 meetings, and we're talking that these groups that are smaller, that have smaller budgets, can go into voluntary contributions. We're sitting here nearly talking about tourism budget of 1.2 million, and we're talking about the cut off of that budget and how we should deliver tourism across the district. If you're looking at the criteria here, having at least 10,000 pounds of funding, excludes a lot of groups. If we say a lot of new groups coming out when we open this pass of 135,000, well, there's groups there already looking for increased funding. They could grow the fast, but if they get increased funding, if every one of them groups get funded, the new groups, they were on the jump because there is no more funding. And that's why it wasn't plucked out of the air. Looking at what, speaking to a number of community groups of what funding they get and what they could do with an increase out of the funding, an £80,000 increase on it wasn't just plucked out of the air. It could do a great deal for increase in tourism figures. And I do, whether you're, the events that the council put on are free, a lot of community events are free as well. And, there were tons of community events. Yeah, some of them are, but a lot of them are. And they factor into the tourism figures as well. If we're getting the whole tourism figures from tourism NI, that's all the events across this district. We can't focus on saying the council are delivering. These figures of the economic impact is solely from the council events. I think if we're looking at the open funding call criteria, and we only increase it by 4% up to 145,000, if we have to try and attract new groups to run tourism events, well, there isn't enough funding there because other ones are going to swallow it up. We won't have £10,000 of funding. And then we want to look at criteria like, are they attracting visitors from outside, well, the first criteria, outside the district of Northern Ireland. Let's look at the figures from the study, that the analysis that we got of all the events. I know we're looking at 1%, that's why we can't read too much into these figures, but it's sure found 86% of the people that went away to join were from Northern Ireland. So in our own festival there, we're not meeting the criteria. Yeah, we're going to go to other community-led tourism events and say, well, listen, you don't attract international visitors. Well, we don't earn that. So it's all right that we can throw 200,000 of capital money at, creating more giants, or we can increase the budget or whatever. We can look after our own festival. And we have the ability to put money in this for them festivals to grow. Community groups don't have that ability. Yet we're going to assess them on the criteria that we actually take on our own. Now, in saying that, it's still only 125 people were surveyed for the way of the giant. And that's 120 people who are from Northern Ireland fighting outside, but I think we're all right. So, you can't really take look too much into them figures. But if we're going to pass this paper and select an option, I have an issue with the open funding call criteria. I have an issue with the level of funding being increased up to £30,000. I have an issue with looking at voluntary contributions because, again, we're getting into a dangerous scenario of probably describing these as community events when they're tourism events run by community groups with a lot of experience over 15, 20 years have built up very successful events and should be supported. An 85% 15 split from this council in a tourism for general funds contributions is not too much to ask for. I'm going to reiterate what I said at the start. If we're going to build a tourism product here, we need to work hand in hand with community groups that are there and not be choking them for funding. It's all right when we said at the first event or the first race workshop, people were saying, if you give them more, they're going to come back looking for more. Look at the return. Look at the stomachs we're coming. At £10,000, 671, it's on these figures, 671,000 return estimated spend. 200% of weight design on a tenth of us. So I think we need to be fair here. We need to look at the budget. as a whole, at 1885-15 was not just up there the air, there's common sense behind it, and that's why I have an issue with option 3. But I'll take a proposal. Is there any more comments before we go to proposals in the vote? Harry?
Like Glenn, I'm a wee bit concerned about new events and the need to be supported, but I don't think this is a meeting for discussion. I think we need a new, I think we're not a meeting, we need to discuss an item on the agenda like this so that we can find how to get support to the new events. But on today's paper, I would second number two, because I think it's the third time we've discussed this at different meetings. And at the very first meeting, I actually proposed number two, but from set aside, so I'm very good on second.
So second, I just make a little bit of a vote. Can I take you back in the second? We have second from the meeting.
Yeah. The other comments, I suppose, you know, I do think that overall, about what I've been thinking, this open fund call criteria, you know, I think we're going probably to that. In a way, I mean, it was the bottom line, somewhere way down here, you have an out. But it was actually stipulating that the visitor numbers and the determined visitor is somebody not from the agreement with me. To be honest, it's done the wrong message out, you know, to the draconian. And I know certainly for Ben, the aim here is, you know, but generally only have 2 years depending your end of development. I mean, these vessels versus last year was just the first year after the final one council one. But I would write out for the friend and say that the 1,000 visitors from outside and off anywhere else. And somebody else who's going to come in, you know, on the open call, potentially a new applicant, and have at least £10,000 of funding. Now, whatever that actually means, actually in council funding, you know, to have the £10,000 in bank, the £10,000 in bank wouldn't be yours anyway. But I'm just thinking, it's not, I don't think it's the right line to use to try to encourage. Encourage people to come in here for what purpose. The other thing is, I do think, because it's a £1.288 million budget, that's why there's so much discussion about it. I think it has got to be that shelter the whole thing to be honest with you. I do think that in some form or other, we need to be talking about how we collectively as a group of councillors, what our attitude to all this is, long before maybe it comes to some, you know, serious papers like this, you know, where exactly, and tease it all out in a sort of a, in a sensible manner someday, because there's about three or four different options there for people, different criteria, you know, there's different sections of our community that are working, are trying to run all types of vessels, and I consider the last thing, I think a lot of them won't know what it's all about, what our thing it is. And then you automatically turn around for the day because someone thinks you're trying to get rid of this. You don't want us. This is all about council and about council think why big staff come in here and we show you how to run a festival. You know, and that can be deemed to be insulting. It might be meant to be insulting, but it certainly be deemed to be that. And I do think we need to set ourselves and just look at it curriculum maybe. I know it's probably two different series, but certainly going forward. But certainly, you come back to what folks are saying here. But I do think that, and we come back to that, is the option two. I mean, because, if you look at it, because there's a level of uncertainty about, and I can make out, about you know, how much the, for example, the expansion of the weight of the and the size of the guardian and the words and all that is, there's an uncertainty there about the amount of money. The footsteps in the forest is quite well attended by outside visitors, it seems, and the word may, the best of time, may remain a one day event. Doesn't mean to say that it will only be a one day event based on scenario two. I think scenario two might be fair enough. I think at an overall cost of 71,000, I think that's what I was saying. So that's my take on it, Danny.
Thanks, sir.
Just either really or wrongly, to maybe clarify that we're talking in blocks of 10,000 pounds and 10,000 pounds. We're not going to afford the funding that we're awarded. It would depend basically on how many, at the worst, since 60 events put forward, that would be criteria,
that could possibly mean somebody getting 10,000 pounds, someone's going to be getting 8,000 pounds, or maybe somebody's getting 8,000, somebody's getting 12,000 pounds. So the moment, we're not talking about 15 pounds or whatever, it just happens across the global money when we divide it. That is my understanding, is that correct, Marie?
Yeah, sure. What we would be saying is that we can apply for a maximum of up to 15,000 pounds, but in the event that we received like a huge number of applicants that met the criteria and succeeded, then we would have to look at the apportionment of that budget and we would bring that back to the committee. And just when I have them mic as well, I just want to clarify to people, we'll keep referring to a 1.2 million pound budget for the tourism event. Scenario 2 refers to a 453,000 pound budget that we have for the Giant Adventures. It doesn't refer to the entire 1.2 million. So the reduction would be off the £453,000 pound budget, which is a significant reduction. We as officers who are running the event find it tight enough to run the events that we do run on the budgets that we currently have. Council have made a commitment to develop their main event programme. We've been following the direction of Council on that, and this is our recommendation to ensure that those events could be developed. And that's all I have to say on the matter.
I just feel that there's a lot of negativity on the toes at the meeting. I think it's very dangerous. Putting that message out that we're looking now potentially for cutting back on festivals. As I say, I've been to most of the festivals to my work, and I found them all to be very family oriented. Anybody you spoke to were really, really pleased about the whole concept of festivals. So I don't think you can lose that, and why I say we need to grow the international visitors. A lot of the local people enjoy them also, and to start cutting back, start looking at the proposal of the sacrament is talking about reducing the festival of life, and there's over 100,000 people visit Newcastle on that one day. And a lot of money was going to be invested to look at more activities on the ground. In the town of Newcastle, and also to the other aspects, corporate hospitality and other aspects. But it was about growing the festival. To start looking at making cuts to that, and start making cuts to make the giant, the section forest, the city of Richard, they were going to amalgamate the flat. There's good opportunities for that. But I think it sends out a very bad message that you're cutting your giant adventures budget. To move money into a pot that we don't know who's going to apply for that one, that's what you're sort of saying, scenario 2 is talking about. Take the money off our festivals that's going well, in my opinion, have a good opportunity to go as well as the community day festivals. But they just put money in a pot that then people might need to take up. We have no idea what the call would look like, who will come back, who will meet our criteria. I don't see a massive amount of groups coming forward in regards to that. They wouldn't have the capacity. And I think that's where the mentoring comes from. That if you have mentoring groups who are trying to go to that next stage, and I keep going back to the day of three demos, is that it's the days of Blues in the Bay, Featherstein and Summer Festival. They're a proven track record. These people can get corporate sponsorship, they can run the festivals extremely well, and I think officers know that. GIJ has now a track record over a number of years. Now, they probably move into a category as well, they can take stand their festival as well. So, I think it's just dangerous to start taking money out of a project where people have maybe been in the hospitality sector, have maybe taken bookings for 2 days for festival flight, and now they're saying that, no, I think maybe just cut back as well.
I think just for myself, I'm certainly not coming to this from being negative. It's being practical and being fair. I'm more looking at, it's not accurate to say that we're looking at cutting the festival site. And I said that, in 18,000 sitting there, the festival site has moved from 1 day to 2 days this year, so it's increasing that budget. And we're looking at, if you're increasing the festival site, let me finish the point. If you're increasing the festival site from 1 day to 2 days, and that's a proposal which hasn't happened yet, it was 1 day last year, so there's an increase in the budget. We're looking at creating giant adventures, so there'll be 4 new giants. I know that comes from the capital budget, but we're trying to create this you know, the festivals all around the Dragon Country. So we are growing the council festivals at a rate far faster than they are supporting the community festivals that are highly successful too. The figures that were presented to us from the officers here show that, and show in some of the community festivals a 200% increase in the return in the economy. So I think it's getting, you know, a fair, where one isn't growing exponentially while the other one is being stagnated. And I fear that the options that are being given here are doing that. We are all focusing on, let's look at making the council festivals the best it can be, while at the same time retaining an extremely small fund for the community-led festivals, and then monitoring how they're going to grow over 3 years. Well, I think that's totally unfair. So, you know, it's not to say that there's going to be a competitive, it's just let's look at the level of growth, and let's be fair with it. We need to work with the community groups. And if we look and say, there is no, there's absolutely no way that if you increase the pot by 90,000 or 192, 195, that you're going to have, or even 135, that you're going to have an amount of money sitting there because, you know, groups will come forward, it might be 10,000. I give an example of a festival. In the Pride Festival, they do have the £10,000 there to meet the criteria, they do attract visitors, but they have seen over 3 years a 58% reduction in the funding. And at the same time, they see the council, you know, putting money into and capital money into their own festivals and growing their own festivals while they're getting cut 58%. That's unfair. And that's where we have to go forward. You know, you still have £1 million, you know, pot. And I understand the second one and 12% cut is from a 400k budget because the smaller festivals were in scenario one. But this is about being equitable and fair across all the tourism events and recognising that tourism events are both council led and community led. And I think there's too much of a focus on tourism events are council led and we should support council projects only. You know, and I'm not putting the words together, this is what I'm saying, but we're sending out the message. We are sending out the message that it was to sit and say that if we increase this budget by, you know, £90,000, there will be money sitting there because groups
won't be money sitting
there. There won't be. If you take say the top, if you take the difference of opinion. If you increase the pocket home with the top three or four festivals getting up to 15,000. So that's an extra 20,000 to fund the budget already. We're looking at option three. It's finished the point. You've 105,000 pound budget. You know, there's a proposal for option three, 135. The top four festivals, they've got capped at 10,000 now, we're talking about 15,000. There's 20,000 pounds gone. So any new festival in this, there's an open call that comes out, there's what, 15,000 pounds or 10,000 pounds there for available for the festivals. Why do we still have to look at the likes of the Pride Festival, which has been cut to 58%, who would like to apply for increased funding? If you get festivals like the Pride Festival that increase apply for 10,000 pounds, you have no scope for any new community-led festivals to apply for this open call. And if they do apply for the open call, they'll be tested on criteria that we don't pass ourselves. I think it is certainly not equitable, and certainly not something that I support. But I'll take the, if there's no more comments, I'll take the proposal from Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Lehanna.
Sure, I'd just like to hear from officers in regards to
the
No, because that's there, I'd like to make a point that the festival was saying, Tom, that you're looking at a 50%, possible 50% increase on the fund. And in regards to the amount of money, and I agree with you, there's other festivals maybe out there might take some of the money. And I think it's important, and I've said it to some of my colleagues, that I think they do a massive job. All them voluntary groups who run their festivals. There's no trying to deliver that, but the cost of the funding is coming from tourism anyway. That's where the costs are coming from. It's us that's looking to support these festivals. The next summer festival had no money from tourism anyway in the last financial year. And yet they got 10,000 from the council. And through mechanism three, there's a possibility that they could get 5,000 pound extra fund, which I think that they would be supportive of that. But I'm just concerned, and you know, that's what I want. Maybe we'll take the first proposal and then see what happens after that. But if we start removing the money, I can only go and sit down in front of me, down on the paper. The festival, the 2 day festival, the festival flight will be reduced back to a 1 day festival. Either that is not accurate, or these figures aren't accurate. But they're saying it's going to change, it's got to spread to them all their investments, if they're growing their investments. as I said, footsteps in the forest, is the one vessel that is really taken in across border revenue, and people spending revenue in their area, going to their restaurants, going to our shops, and putting money into the local economy. And you're saying we should cut that back. So, it's either accurate or it's not accurate.
Well, just before there is no proposed domain to cut the budget. The budget is that sharing out the budget equitably. We're talking that I am not proposing that. I'm still going to have that. I understand the process as far as keeping the heading successful. But it's how we hand out this budget to groups that are running tourism events. There is absolutely no cut. I'm not sitting here to say that we should spend less on tourism events. I'm saying that we should be supporting successful, highly successful tourism events. And I've made the point, and I'm making it again. I'm talking about a 58% cut to a highly successful weekend festival here in Newry that is not getting supported while the council events are getting supported year on year on year. And we're looking at going to measure the growth over 3 years. So I'm talking about less than fairness. So there's absolutely no cut. If we're talking about, if we're, you know, the figures that you have in there, if we're sitting, you know, from the 2 years that I've been in council and the festival looks like, and we're sitting here going, hey, that's a festival, and of course it is. Let's propose that to be a 2 day festival while taking away from community groups that are getting less and less funding each year.
I think we're increasing the problem.
58%. 58% from this committee, from 12,000 to 5,000 for the Pride Festival, we can do all the ones, is funding removed from community festivals. And I feel as if we're going down the route of supporting council events over community events. Where are you going with?
Sure. To be clear for everyone, what we brought to council was the idea of growing our event. Scenario 2 is a cut to the budget that we put in as an increase to enable us to grow the event. The biggest increase in that was the proposed Guardians of the Mourn Festival, and that was where we were putting. And it's an overwrap around the Giants Adventure Programme. That's about building new giants that would be placed across the district, brought together and all come into the one Guardians of the Mourn, and will be tied in with the Giant and the City of Merchants Festival. The removal for the festival flight is in recognition of the fact that it's been so successful that we would like to look at putting on the Irish flag over the 2 days. It is our advice that if you reduce the increased cost to the increase that we've proposed for the budget for the Giant Adventure event as an under scenario 2, we will certainly have to review those and it will impact, and that may be that we decide that the best way to deal with it from a logistical perspective is to reduce the number of giants that are built, or how we actually run, whether we run best flight for 1 day or 1.5 day, we put more in than 1 day, or we will certainly have to look at that. As I said a while back, our budgets for our events are quite tight. We run those on relatively tight budgets, so a cut it is a cut in scenario too. The other thing that I would like to just make reference to, there's been reference to the economic impact assessment. The economic impact assessment is not a return on the amount of money that we as a council contributed. The economic impact assessment is a return on the entire money or cost that it has been to run the actual event itself. We have not been privy to the detail behind that. So we may have contributed £10,000, but the community or the organisation running it may have cost them £150,000 or £20,000. We don't know. Under this scenario here, what we're talking about is the regularisation of this. We will get a better feed for what is actually being spent on events across the board, which will give us a more accurate analysis of the economic impact assessment. So this is important to make that point. The other thing is, this is not all about the return on finances, this is about reputation and the improvement that this has had, the positive impact this has had in the district. We've significant social media content around how successful the events have been, whether that be community led tourism events or whether that be council events. The events and council officers, to be very clear as well, have been actively working with those groups and will continue to work with them because we see the value in them for the tourism industry. And that builds into our whole visitor experience plan development as well. So, as a tip, we've put the scenario to you. We're happy to move forward based on whatever the recommendation of the committee is.
Thanks, Mary. I'm going to take Willie's proposal second by doing that to a vote. So, all in the committee for option 3.
1, 2, 3, 4. 4.
All against? Against
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, we'll take option then. We've got a proposal for option 2. All for option 2?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Against?
1, 2, 3, 4.
No exceptions. 4. I don't know if you're still going to vote in the Irish Cabinet on Board 8. I can see another full debate on this when it comes to the board council.
That's what Minister Paul Charlie and that's what I'm asking for on debating these issues. They're very important.
I don't want to bring back debate, but I also have to ask out to the floor as well. Council officers have run a number of workshops to discuss them, so it's not what we've spent in this forum in a first discussion and first debate.
No, I don't think anybody else is suggesting that. And I was on the fourth event when the proposal of 85-15 was proposed and taken from the second, so I think everybody's well aware of that. But we've got the majority for option 2, so I'll start with it. Moving on. Okay, we've got items 14 to 17 for noting, so I'll just go through them one by one, just if there's any questions on them. Item 14 is the action tracker update sheet, and the proposal and second are both on the sheet. Who's got a second for the action sheet? Carried. Okay, item 15 is the scheme gift delegation. Who's the second? Well, carried. Item 16, the report from Mary Mullen Museum. Or the application for the remaining right there. Just one open, close the second. Robert Harry. Item 17, update proposed down at hotel.
Women's support and work, and maybe as well, so there's a well weak consultation of the public, and now we find out that it's just improved the time, you know, at the particular time, I would have thought that maybe the time that we care about it started, just a particular time. Really, it's very time for the region, sir.
Sure, I follow up with the planning officers, but I have raised about one of the number of meetings, and we don't foresee any issues.
Thank you. What was the second of first for them? Okay, item 18. This item is deemed to be restricted by Directive Paragraph 3, Schedule 8 for the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014, Schedule 6, Paragraph 3, Schedule 6, of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information related to the financial business affairs of any particular person who may be cancelled holding that information, and the public may, by resolution, be excluded during the day of the business. Can you propose a second of the committee? Opposed? Item 18 in the Downpatrick PSNI station, the committee proposed and seconded to go with the recommendation of the document proposed by Dermot Curran and seconded by Harry Happy. Yep. Okay. Stay at home. Happy Christmas.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'm not put it in because it was in committee anyway. I'm not put it in. No. I mean, I'll check with Mary, but I probably wouldn't have done it. Because for in committee, I think we don't really put in any details.